All right, class, listen up. This isn't your regular public school education. Here, we discuss the money topics you should have been taught in school, but weren't. Join a community of people who are taking their lives into their own hands. Learn about financial independence so that you can design the life of your dreams. You're listening to The Phi School. Let's build a life worth running to.
All right, what's up, everybody? I'm Jared, and this is my buddy Russell, and thanks for coming back for another episode of the Phi School Podcast. Russell, how you doing today, brother?
Doing great. School's been good. Yeah, honestly, just a really great point in life. So what about you, Jared? Anything fun over there?
We just jumped into a new section in our aircraft maintenance school, so I'm learning all about airplanes. I think airplanes are super cool, so I'm pretty happy to learn about all the cool airplanes that we have in our fleet. But dude, I wanted to share, we were talking a little bit about this before we hit record, but kind of a cool, that's not the right word, an interesting travel hack, kind of a hiccup with Southwest, which Southwest's been on the news for everybody because of the way that they canceled, you know, a billion flights during the holidays. So kind of a fun credit card hack. So there are a lot of American Express credit cards that have airline incidental fee credits. So some of these are like the American Express Platinum cards, the American Express Hilton Aspire card. The Platinums have a $200 per year incidental fee credit, and then the Aspire has a $250 incidental fee credit every year. And what you do is whenever you get your card, or if you've had the card for a while in the month of January, you select your preferred airline. So you can select United, Southwest, Delta, American Airlines, you know, anybody. And then for the rest of that year, every time that you have to buy, like you're going to pay for Wi-Fi, or you have to pay for a bag, or you're going to pay for seat selection on the plane, or like taxes and fees, like those all count as incidental fees. So with whatever airline that you have as your preferred airline, you'll get reimbursed for those fees for up to the first $200 or the first $250, depending on which card you have. Well, in November, December timeframe, we realized that we still had about $175 left on my American Express Platinum card. And my preferred airline for that year was Southwest. And you can't change which airline is your preferred airline until the month of January. So by the time this episode goes out, it'll probably not be January anymore. So most people have missed it. But if you don't select your airline at all, you can select your preferred airline at any time of the year. So if you just got a card and you've never gone in and selected your preferred airline, you can still go in right now, whenever you're listening to this, and just pick your selected airline, your preferred airline. But I was coming up on the end of the year. This credit resets at the very beginning of the calendar year. So December 31st is your last day, and then January 1st, it resets. So it was like November 30th, and I still had like $175 of Southwest incidental fee credits to use. And like, kind of cool hack, there are a lot of forums that you can go on in the Flyer Talk world. And so I was on Flyer Talk and I was looking at all these forums, and with Southwest, if you purchase a flight that costs less than $109, then it will code as an incidental fee. And so if you buy a ticket that's like $85, then for whatever reason, Southwest will code that as an airline incidental fee, and then you'll get reimbursed for the cost of your ticket. So kind of cool. I had like $175 left and I wanted to use that for Southwest credit. And so I was just going to book a ticket. And at the time, Southwest was running like a 30% discount on flights booked before the end of March. So I was like, okay, I'm going to be back I was still in Italy at the time. So I was like, I'll be back in the States. Maybe I can buy some random Southwest ticket. I'll just buy the ticket. And then a few weeks later, I'll cancel it before I go. And then I'll get the credits. And then I can use it on a different flight. Or maybe I can use it for my mom. And mom can take a flight to go visit her grandbabies in Texas or something like that. So I was like going online, looking at their price calendar. And I had to buy two separate one-way flights. Each flight had to be less than $89. So I found two flights, booked them. They're like $89 or $88 and some change. A couple days later, the credits post. So now I've been like reimbursed for both of those tickets. I'm super stoked. And now I go into Southwest and I'm like going to cancel my ticket so I can get the credits to use on a different flight, or to combine those credits to use towards like a different, like a single flight or something. And dude, my flights don't show up in Southwest anymore. I'm like in my Southwest account and the flights aren't there. It's like I've never booked them, but I have the tickets. Like I have the ticket purchases in the receipt on my statement on my credit card. So I like pull up my Platinum card and I go through and it says like, this is your ticket number. On this day you bought this ticket. And then, you know, like a week later, we reimbursed you for those tickets. But I'd never received an email with a confirmation number from Southwest. And I'd like, when I go into my account, it shows that there's no upcoming trips. And I tried like my wife's account, I tried my mom's account. Like no one has these tickets. I don't know where they are, but I have the ticket numbers in my PDF statement from American Express. So tomorrow I'm going to call Southwest and say like, hey, I booked these tickets. Here's my ticket numbers. Where's my confirmation number? I need to cancel this ticket. So I've like been reimbursed and everything. So it was like no money out of pocket, but I don't have these credits to actually use on any flights. And I can't even like gift them to anybody right. because I don't have the credits. So there's a it's
kind of a bummer. Was it one of the flights that got canceled with the whole like December fiasco, or it literally
no, because the tickets were for like February and I booked the tickets back in November. The tickets were for February and I realized that I never got a confirmation email from Southwest. Like, so I never got a confirmation number, never got like a, hey, don't forget you're flying on this date. Here's your itinerary. Like, I don't have that. But what was weird is in American Express, when you go into your statement, it says in there, you booked a ticket with Southwest. It was for this person. This is their, like, this is the actual ticket number. And here's the departure and the landing time for these flights, which I didn't know would show up in your credit card statement. So if you lose a flight, at least with Southwest on American Express, it shows up in your statement. So you can go in there and you can find your ticket number. It doesn't show you confirmation number, just your ticket number for the actual purchase.
Wow. That's crazy. That's crazy. It just disappears.
Yeah. Who knows where it went. So I'll follow up, the next time we record to see if I got it resolved.
Yeah. Hopefully you can get your money's worth out of that. So
yeah, hopefully. All right, Russell, but what are we talking
still,
about today?
But still a pretty cool hack. Nevertheless,
yeah.
Like, most of the time, it's probably not going to end up like that, right? Like,
yeah.
It's still a pretty cool hack. But today, we wanted to kind of talk about one of the, I would say, like foundational articles of financial independence. And honestly, one of the articles that turned on, like you listen to a lot of podcasts about financial independence, and almost every single one will mention this article at one point or another, if not multiple times throughout their entire season. And it's The Shockingly Simple Math Behind Early Retirement by Mr. Money Mustache. And so today we kind of just wanted to talk through this and give our thoughts on some of the things that they talk about in here, as well as point out some of the really, really cool things that can kind of give you your kickstart into this realm and kind of get... I feel like the biggest thing this article does is it makes you realize how achievable financial independence really is, which is really, really cool. So Jared, why don't you kick us off?
Yeah. So this article came out on January 13th, 2012. So just over a decade old. And he'll kind of skip this intro, but long story short, he had written a bunch of articles already at this point. About how he retired when he was in his 30s. And he said, let's see, people tend to become overwhelmed and say things like, yeah, good for you, Mr. Money Mustache, but how can I possibly know when I'll have enough to retire myself with a completely different lifestyle? And he says, well, I have a surprise for you. It turns out that when it boils right down to it, your time to reach retirement depends on only one factor, your savings rate as a percentage of your take-home pay. So if you want to break things down a bit further, your savings rate is determined entirely by two things, how much you take home each year and how much you can live on. So, Russell, what stands out to you here at this first part?
Well, I think the coolest part here is that it just simplifies everything, right? I think a lot of people, when you think about financial independence, are going to be like, okay, well, I got to be like all around the stock market. I got to know my way around that. I got to be saving like this much money, and then I can like, you know, there's just a lot of moving parts that I think people like think it's way more complex than it actually is. And what this article does is it really cuts away all the excess, because when it comes down to it, the percentage of your pay that you are able to save is all that really matters. As long as you're investing in like the low cost index fund. And there's a couple assumptions that we can talk about in a little bit, but it simplifies it incredibly, which is so cool. And I think the thing that really turned it on for me was essentially, if you make 100% of your income a year and you save 50% of that, then that means you're putting away one entire year's worth of pay into your bank account, because you're living on 50% of that and 50% of it is going into your savings. And so in 1 year, you're essentially able to make 2 years worth of living expenses. And so as that percentage goes up, it exponentially shortens that time period it takes to reach financial independence. Because once you're saving 75% of your pay, you're living on only 25%, which means you're putting 3 years worth of living expenses into your bank account. And then that's going to keep, or into your investment account. And that's going to keep growing and growing and growing. And those 3 years after like 8 to 10 years will be worth 6 years. And after 8 to 10 years, it'll be worth 12 years. And it just keeps doubling. And so this time period gets shorter and shorter and shorter, because not only are you saving more, you're spending less, is kind of the idea. And so the less you can live on, the more you're able to save, and the more years worth of living expenses are ending up in savings versus being spent, which is like, it makes so much sense, which is crazy.
Yeah. And when you look at it, like, you could, so you said in there that it's growing exponentially. So if we're just looking at the savings part, not the investing part, if we're doing just the savings, it's not growing exponentially, just the savings part. Because like you said, let's say you make $100,000 a year, but you live on $25,000 a year. Then every year you're putting 3 years of expenses in the bank, which means, you know, it's not, I don't know if it'd be really possible, but you could, let's say, work every fourth year. You just work for 1 year, then you take 3 years off. Then you work for a year, and then you take 3 years off. You're just kind of like doing these like mini retirements every 4 years. But like you were saying, if you're investing this money into a low cost index fund, and we talked all about, I mean, we've started doing episodes on the stock series and the importance of index funds, and their incredible consistency and ability to return, just like the whole market, just as the economy grows, like your money grows with it. Well, at that point, then when you, let's say you're saving 25, you're sorry, you're living on 25% of your income, and then you're saving the other 75%, that 75% isn't just, let's say, using $100,000. It's not just $75,000 by the time that you tap into it, because it's invested in the stock market and it's growing somewhere between 8 and 12% every year. And so that $75,000 is eventually going to be worth $150,000, at which point if you're on $25,000 of expenses, now you have 6 years of expenses saved up in the bank. And like at that point, your money is actually growing exponentially. And that's how you can get to a point where the money that you have invested is growing at such a rate that you actually can't use all of the money. And that, which means that money's growing just perpetually. And you're just constantly just taking your withdrawals, living on all of that. And then that money's going to be there for every single year for the rest of your life.
Right. And so this whole model is built off of the 4% rule, which I don't know if we've really talked about here yet. But essentially what that is four, if you can live off of 4% of your total invested amount. So if you have $100,000 in the stock market, and that means $4,000, because that's 4% of $100,000. Or if you have $1 million, then that's $40,000. And the idea is that if you can live off of 4% of your total stock portfolio, then your stock portfolio will continue to grow quicker than inflation, even while you pull out that 4%. And the assumptions there are, first, that you're going to make average about 8% a year in the stock market, which over the past any 10 to 15 year period, you'll make the average, or the lowest, I think the lowest you can, that's ever been made has been 8% over a 10 to 15 year period. Is that correct?
I'm not sure if it's over a 10 to 15 year period or if the minimum is a 20 year period. I'm not sure where the fluctuations come in, but I do know that over the last 40 year period, it was 11.9%. And the average 40 year period since the 1920s has been in that 11 to 12% range.
And then I think before that, with like the Great Depression and some of the other things, it was about 8%. And so I think that's what they use for like a safer, just to be safe, right? Or is that, or
you got me there, man. I can't remember. I've looked at all these numbers like so many different times that I can't remember which periods of time you're more likely to see 8%. So over a 40 year period, we're looking at like 12%. So you might be right there in that, it might be in that 10 to 15 year range where we consistently see 8%.
That very well could be it. And I know that the last like century or so has been exceptionally well, like the stock market has done exceptionally well. And so we're seeing returns of like 11, 12%. And so I think people use 8% just to be safe a lot of the times.
Yeah. That's kind of like the industry standard for like annual growth.
Yeah. And so the idea there is if you have 8% that you're making the stock market annually on average over like a 20 year period, 3% of that is going to be taken up for inflation because on average, usually inflation is about 3%. Right now it's a little bit higher because of some of the issues with COVID and stuff. But usually it's around 3%. And then you're pulling out 4% and that leaves 1% left to continue your stock to grow quicker than inflation. And so you're leaving 4% in and 3% of that is essentially being negated by inflation just by things costing more over time. But it's still going to be growing quicker than inflation. And so your portfolio will continue to grow and grow and grow and grow and be able to sustain you essentially until forever. And so
if you want to look at the studies that were done on this, you want to be looking at Bill Bankens, he did this study for the first time. Oh, geez, I can't remember what year it is off the top of my head, but like 30, 40 years ago or something like that. And he was the kind of the first person to look at what rate of withdrawal what withdrawal rate you'd be able to pull out from some nest egg of money for it to last. He was looking at a 30 year period. And so he was looking at everything from a 40-60 split between bonds and stocks to an 80-20 split of 80% stocks, 20% bonds. He was looking at those over every 30 year period. And it was withdrawing 4% was a 96% success rate, which means that if you retired, he looked at every year that you retired over like the history of the United States stock market and found that 96% of the time you ended that 30 year period with money still, which is an incredibly high success rate, 96% success rate. And then when he looked at withdrawing 3.3% of a nest egg, then in 99 point something percent of the times, you still had money after any 30 year period. And then after that study, the Trinity study came out and they did the same thing and they corroborated the findings that Bill Bankens had.
Which is incredible. And the other thing to realize there is that's if you're pulling out your 3 or 4% every single time without even thinking about it, right?
Yeah. And that's not adjusting for years where there's like a recession. And that's assuming you're just going out and spending that exact dollar amount every time. You're not being flexible. You're not cutting down in like leaner years. You're just like spending exactly the same every single year. And the moment that you introduce that flexibility into it, dude, your success rate goes up. Like it approaches 100 because all it takes is for you to be just a little bit mindful in those years where things are not as great.
The other thing to think about there is while there is that 4% fail rate, like the other side of how much money people ended up with on average, right? And I don't know the numbers there, but I'm assuming that there's a significant portion of those people who ended up with a larger nest egg than what they started with, you know?
Oh yeah, I want to say, man, now I wish I had written these numbers down. I think it was 50% of people in these studies ended up with twice as much money as they had than before. And I want to say 30%, maybe a little bit less, ended up with three times as much money as they had before, like in these scenarios, which is absolutely insane. So basically, you're going to be just fine. And this isn't even considering what Bill Perkins, right? He wrote Die with Zero. Is that his name?
I don't know.
Yeah, Bill Perkins. He wrote the book Die with Zero. He says he says that we got to stop thinking about just living off the interest and also living off the principal, like eating up that principal too. Because if you save $1 million, you live off $40,000 of it every single year. When you die, you've still got $1 million. Like, what are you going to do with it? Odds are, by the time that you're dead, your children aren't going to actually need that money. And because they're going to be, let's say you live to be 80, your children are going to be in their 50s, 60s. Like they're probably well established. They probably don't need your money. And even your grandchildren who are going to be in their like 30s or 40s, like they're not going to really need your money. Like most of them probably aren't. And if you've been doing your best to teach your children like sound financial principles and hard work ethic, like probably none of your children actually need any of that money. So why don't we maybe not wait that long and start consuming the money that we've been saving so that we can have the life experiences that we want to have long before we're like 65 and can no longer go water skiing or snowboarding or take the trip with your friends to Cancun because you need a hip replacement and you can't swim. Or like, you know what I mean?
Exactly. You want to enjoy life as much as you can while you're here. And leaving, you know, if you're doubling your money over that retirement period, you end up with $2 million. You could have been living off of way more than 4%, and gotten a much higher standard of living from that money. So I think that people oftentimes criticize like that small margin of error with the 4%, but don't look at like how large the margin of success is as well. So there's a huge upside here that I think a lot of times people forget about, which is huge. So
yeah, and I think that ties directly into kind of the meat and potatoes of this article. And so what Mr. Money Mustache does is he lays out the math and then looks at every 5% increment of your savings rate and how many years it'll take for you to be able to retire. So like we were talking about, right? If you live off of 50% of your income and you save 50% of your income, what he does is he sees how long it takes for that savings invested at 8% every year, compounded over time. At what point does that amount at what point does that amount grow to the point where the interest, or where you can now withdraw 4% of that, and that matches what you were living off of before. That matches your expenses. And so he breaks it up. So like you mentioned before, if you save 0% of your income and you consume every single dollar of your income, you will never be able to retire ever, right? Because you have no savings. Your nest egg isn't growing. It's not even there. It's an empty egg. It's like Easter when you like open the egg and there's like nothing in it. My parents used to do that. But if you save all of your money and you're not spending anything, well, then you could live forever. Like your retirement would be infinite because you're not consuming anything, right? And that's not going to happen. Or you're assuming someone else is saving for your retirement for you and you're not doing any of that work. So somewhere in there, we see all the different increments of like how long it's going to take for you to be able to retire. So he breaks it up in 5% increments. We don't have to read all of them necessarily, but maybe kind of look at like the big, just kind of like the big marker. So if you save 5% of your income, it's going to take you 66 working years until you can retire. When we say until you can retire, what we're saying is until you can retire and the savings that you have is a nest egg large enough that you can live off of 4% of it. And that money will last you for however long you're going to live. So whether you only live to be 80, whether you live to be 180, like the goal is to get this nest egg large enough that it can produce income for you forever, for the rest of ever. So if you only save 5%, we're looking at 66 working years until retirement.
Which I think is incredible that that's possible with just 5%. But also important to realize that if you start working at 20 and you work 66 years, you're going to be 86 before you retire, and you're not going to need that 4% rule to be able to retire. And so you'd probably be able to retire much earlier than 86 because you're going to have a pretty substantial nest egg that you could pull off of the principal for as well.
Yeah.
But it's still just a it's an interesting point that you could live off the 4% after 66 years, which is incredible that that's even possible at all.
Yeah. And I think this would be the point where we mention, pension, Social Security and whatnot. If you are at this point where you still have 66 years, working years until your retirement, I would not count on us having Social Security or like a government welfare pension, because we could have a whole conversation about what's going on with our with Social Security in terms of the amount of money in those pots. But it would be safer and wiser, more it would be more prudent for you to assume that you're not going to have any pensions just given to you for anything, and focus on being responsible and taking building your own quote unquote pension with this nest egg for yourself. Now, if you're, you know, in the military or you're working for a school or something where there is an actual pension plan, then you're going to factor that into how much money you actually need for your expenses. And that'll determine what your nest egg size needs to look at or whatnot. But so this is assuming none of those pensions. This is just assuming you're building your entire own nest egg for your own retirement.
And so I think the coolest thing here is just by jumping up that percent by 5%, from 5% to 10%, you end up taking 15 years off of your retirement point. And so now if you were to start at 20 and save 10%, instead of retiring at 86, you're not able to retire around 75, around 70, right? 71.
71.
Which is getting close to reasonable. That's still quite a bit longer than I would ever want to work for, but that's doable. And people do that. There are a lot of people who end up working that long, just because they aren't as financially responsible as they could have been. And so, it's cool to see that big of a jump from such a small increment, you know?
Yeah. And then, when you jump up just another 5%, so now you're saving 15% of your income, then you're shaving another 8 years off of that. So let's say you start working at 20, it'll only take you 43 years for your nest egg to be sufficient for you to withdraw on it at the 4% rule. So you'd be 63. And that's, that's like Social Security, that is the standard 21st century retirement age. So if you're saving 15% of your income from the day you turn 20 until you're 63, you're going to be good to go.
Exactly. And that's crazy. 15% is such a small, doable amount. And it starts to, that's the point where it's like, oh, this is doable. And then you start ratcheting it down and down and down. And it's like, wow, how early can I retire? I don't have to wait till I'm 60. I don't have to wait till I'm 50. And you can start to see how reasonable it can be when you start to jump down. And so let's jump down to maybe the 50%, or do you want to start at 25?
So let's just do 10% increments. So if you save 20% of your income, which is I think doable for most people, 20%, you're looking at 37 years until retirement. So that means you'd be 57 if you started at 20. Now you'd be 57. That's pretty cool. And now if you went up to 30%, you'd only be 48. You'd be 48, dude. That's if you retired at 48 today, everyone would be looking at you now what are you going to do? Are you going to go get a job? Are you okay? Where's your Lamborghini? You're clearly rolling in dough or something like that if you could retire at 48.
Right. And the cool thing here is that this model is built to last forever. And so if you'd retire at 48, you're not going to run out of money in 20 years, because the 4% rule is lasting. You don't deplete your principal. And so this can last as long as you last. You don't have to worry about running out of money at 80.
Well, yeah. And going back to what we were talking about earlier, there is a 96% chance that if you are completely inflexible, that this money is going to last you forever. 96% chance. And if you're 48, let's say there's a huge recession like there is right now. If you're 48 and that happens, you just go get a job. You could be flipping burgers. You could be working at Chipotle. You don't even have to get you don't even have to go back into whatever job you had before. You could literally do just any job, and that would be more than enough income. Minimum wage for 1 year is more than enough income to offset the likelihood, or to offset that withdrawal that you'd be doing from your nest egg. Totally doable. And at that point, as long as you're physically capable of it, dude, you're looking at 100% success rate. or as close to 100% as you can be in an uncertain future.
Which is incredible. And then let's jump it up to 50%, which I think is a lot of times people in the FI community kind of talk about 50% savings rate. And that's kind of almost like what you would call an industry standard. That's kind of like a good goal to shoot for. And if you're hitting this, the reason that they're shooting for this is that the amount of years that it takes you to get to retirement is 17. And so we're talking, if at 20 years old, you're able to save 50%, if you take your paycheck, cut it in half, put half in savings or half in the stock market, and then you live on the other half, then you're going to be able to retire at the age of 37.
Dude, that's so
That's cool. unreal. Yeah. That's like, at that point, you still have your whole life ahead of you.
And oh my this gosh, nest you have egg like of two yours, lives ahead of you.
Exactly. This nest egg of yours is going to be able to like take you on trips. You're going to be able to spend time with your family, your kids. You're going to be able to do the things you care about. And that I think is the incredible part because it's essentially giving your life back to you. You don't have to work until 65 making someone else a ton of money. You can just put your years in, your 17 years in, save half of it, and then go live the life of your dreams, right? Of doing the things that you care about, the things that you want to. Now, obviously, depending on how much you're making, you may or may not be able to go on a cruise every single month, but at least you won't be working from 5 to 7 unless that's what you want to do. And at that point, you can.
Yeah. Well, and going back to the way that this was built at the beginning, based on just your savings rate, when your savings investments reaches like that threshold where it's now sufficient and you can retire, nothing in your life changes. Like nothing. Like you were living the exact same quality of life before you retired as you did after you retired. It's not like you were like, oh, I'm like skimping, and now I can live this huge life of luxury. No, like you're living the exact same life you had before. So like nothing's changed. And listening to hundreds of interviews of people who have already hit their financial independence number and are now quote unquote FI and, you know, retired or whatever, most of them say that their expenses go down because they're no longer commuting to work, or they're not as stressed as they used to be. So they're not impulse buying. Their decision fatigue has like improved. So they're no longer like dead tired when they come home. So then they're just buying things, or they're eating out more often, or they're just like kind of like wasting their money. Like they're coming at life with more energy and a better perspective. And so now they're not spending as much money. So their expenses go down, which means they're like, now they're like way past their FI number because their expenses have gone down, which means they could live an even bigger lifestyle than they were before they retired. And they're still going to have the money for it.
It's incredible. And the cool part is that the odds of your portfolio continue to go up quicker than you're able to like spend your 4%. Are pretty high. And so essentially that 4% is going to continue to get a larger and larger and larger percent.
This is adjusted for inflation.
Exactly. A larger dollar amount in today's dollar values.
Yeah. It's not $40,000 on a million. If you had $1 million before, it's not $40,000 every year for the next 30 years. It's like 40,000 this year and then 41,000 next year, and in 10 years it's actually like $50,000. Like it's going up with inflation too.
Exactly. And so your lifestyle is going to get more and more cramped. With this retirement method, the odds are is your life is going to get more and more cushy as time goes on, which is crazy. It's crazy.
Yeah. So we highly recommend that you check out this article. So you can see he's got a graph in here, he's got a table in here. And again, it's called The Shockingly Simple Math Behind Early Retirement. You can find it at MrMoneyMustache.com. This is mustache spelled M-U-S-T-A-C-H-E. I know there's actually like multiple ways that people spell mustache out there on the internet. So one last point here that he talks about. So I guess we'll kind of just leave it up for kind of like open discussion. When we're looking at this, right, we have a simple equation of spend less than you earn and invest the difference. And the bigger that gap is between what you're spending and what you're earning, then the more that you're going to be able to save and the faster you're going to be able to retire and live off of that money. There's two ends of that equation. One of those is you can, like, if you're not where you'd like to be and you'd like to increase your savings rate, you either need to cut your expenses or increase your income. And depending on what other podcasts or blogs or people that you're listening to. Some of them will focus heavily on increasing your income, and others will focus heavily on cutting your expenses. Here, Mr. Money Mustache, he focuses on cutting your expenses because, like you were saying, when you cut your expenses, not only do you have more money to invest, but now you need less money to live on in the future. And so it's kind of like a double whammy. It's like a, you know, like a two for one, like two benefits for the price of one benefit or one cost. But there are some people out there like Joshua Sheets from Radical Personal Finance who focuses heavily on increasing your income, because what he likes to focus on is if you could increase your, let's say you could increase your income by $10,000 a year, you now have more money that you could be saving and you could be living a slightly larger life if you wanted to. You don't have to, you could just save all of that money, but maybe you increase, maybe you add a little bit more money into your travel budget every month, right? So maybe you're traveling a little bit more, you're going on more trips, you're living the life that you want to now, or you're getting closer to the life that you want to be living now, while also fast tracking your savings so that you can achieve financial independence in the process. And you know, which one of those things you need to focus on is entirely up to you. You know, in the end, you can't live off of zero. So you're going to need to live off of something. You can only cut so far back, but also we have no idea what tomorrow's going to look like. So maybe you cut back until you find that it's really hurting and you don't want to be living that life anymore. And then you go back up a little bit and you're kind of finding where you're getting the maximum amount of value out of your money, and you're not completely depriving yourself, but maybe also not completely splurging all the time. And then, you know, focusing on the other ends of this equation. Once you've cut your spending down to what you think is reasonable enough for you, the kind of life that you would like to continue living on, then you can spend your time focusing on increasing your income and saving the rest of your money in different ways.
Mm-hmm. And I think the cool part about that whole bit was that this really can fit any certain person's type of lifestyle. This isn't just for people who want to live on $10,000 a year, right? And people who want to live a bigger lifestyle in retirement and who want to spend more across their lifespan can use this math. They're just going to focus on different parts of the equation. And that's completely reasonable. And there's nothing wrong with that. And I think that we both subscribe to a little bit of both, honestly. Because I think that's one of the best ways to maximize really both ends of the equation. So thanks everyone for tuning in today. And we appreciate all you guys' support, all you guys' feedback. And if you guys have any questions or comments, please reach out to us. We'd love to hear from you. And I guess we'll catch you guys next time here on the FI School Podcast.
Thanks for coming to the FI School today. We hope you learned something new and, better yet, took action. Don't forget to share this episode with somebody who needs it, and be sure to leave a 5-star review. If you want to get in touch with us, shoot us an email at mailbag@thefischool.com. And until next time, enjoy this super sweet saxophone outro. Class dismissed.